911 to emergency.
Welcome to Decoding the Crime Verse. I am Nelsie Lee. And she's Danny.
Sorry, the record. I don't know what just happened. We're just gonna. Guys, the people I'm in a room with are very strange. I'm telling you.
It all comes with the territory.
Hey, I don't understand why we're friends.
So, today.
Prison break-ins, bank robberies, bombs, getaways.
Everything.
We have it all.
Epic.
Epicness.
Yay.
Okay. Right? We decided to give you basically a movie.
Yep.
So something you watch in the TV shows. But no, it happened. So in the 1980s, there was a terrifying pattern combining bank robberies, home invasions, and taking families of bank executives hostage. For years. My voice went funny there. For years, federal agents track their suspects, always one step behind. Today, we will look at the crime spree of our two suspects, Jerry Connors and Joseph Dacherty.
JJ, for short.
Which one?
Both of them. They JJ together.
But Terry.
Not oh, I thought you said Jerry.
No, I was like,
Jerry sounds like a bank robber.
Okay,
Terry sounds like...
We're going to call them TJ together.
But Terry doesn't sound like a bankrupt anyway.
Apparently Terry was the brains. He even wears glasses.
Terry sounds like...
Terry? Joseph.
Terry looks and sounds like he could be someone's... No, he looks creepy. He looks like a serial killer.
He honestly looks like Zodiac vibes.
He
with
does.
With the glasses. Mm. Right?
Is that him? No.
No.
They weren't at the same time.
Yeah, this was in the 80s. Zodiac was 50s. Yes.
Oh,
trying to think about my date
somewhere there.
50s, 40s, 60s. We have a date range, people. Because please note, we know about crime, but these details, we don't keep them in the back of our
heads. I don't remember half of the details from last week's show.
No,
just
but,
by the way.
Well, this is a side note. My history teacher always said that when we wrote exams and tests, he was never going to ask us what dates things happened. Because he said, you can Google a date.
Yeah.
But if you learn the meaning behind it and the motives and the consequences, that's what he was trying to tell.
Your history teacher is nice. They
I
asked
know,
us for dates.
I miss him. He said as long as you didn't tell him that World War I happened in 1845, you were really good.
Didn't it? I'm joking.
Nalene, don't give me stress. So... I was about to say so early in the day, but it's already the afternoon here, so that's not a thing. So, these two convicted felons basically met in prison. And often what happens in prison, people learn new techniques and find new partners.
Well, what they should be doing is being...
Rehabilitated.
That's the word I was going to
say.
But
instead they are learning new things.
Yeah.
So,
hectic.
In 1982, a group of former inmates began a spree of kidnapping and robbery. For years, the suspects used false names and a network of criminal contacts to elude capture. So, on the December 28, 1982, in Oklahoma City, the Oklahoma City Bank Vice President Steve Thompson and his wife Ellen arrived home from a holiday party when a car pulled up at their house and out stepped two men claiming to be FBI agents. But on asking for identification, the men forced them into their house via gunpoint. The leader then began interrogating Thompson about the bank where he worked. Thompson gave him info about the bank's complex security system, but didn't give him names of the people with the combinations to try keep them safe.
Yeah.
Loyal Thompson. We support people like Thompson.
Do we? He told him everything else.
Yeah, but he kept the people safe. And they can't get into the safe without the combinations. So technically...
Okay.
Anyway. The leader warned Thompson to follow his orders exactly, and... He was trying to make the point that if anyone sets off the alarms or anything went wrong and police came, that he would kill the police. So they were basically saying, listen to us, do what you're told, or people will get hurt. The gunmen held them hostage overnight, and an hour before dawn, they forced the Thompsons to drive them to the bank. They then waited for the employees to arrive, and within 30 minutes, the gunmen had hundreds and of thousands of dollars in hand. They placed the manager in the restrooms and told him not to come out for 5 minutes. However, he waited about a minute and a half before coming out, and the robbers seemed to have fled, and he then called the police. The Oklahoma City Police then contacted the FBI, and Special Agent Mike Cycle took the call. And I didn't know this, but apparently in America, bank robberies are jurisdiction of the FBI.
Yeah.
So they were obviously brought in, and this meant that a nationwide police force would then investigate the crime.
Would you not accuse Thompson, though, if I was an FBI agent? I'm sorry, you came with them to work.
But you were held at gunpoint.
I don't know that. They could be working for him.
That is true.
And he's acting, and now he's enjoying all the money.
So the Thompsons described the ordeal, which began in their homes, and they described how no one was hurt, but it was a sophisticated, well-planned crime, and no evidence was left behind. The robbers must have struck before, so often we find this, they might have done smaller things, because it takes planning. You can't just do it right the first time. And no similar robberies had occurred in that area in the past. So the agents of the FBI then searched the database to see if anything similar had been committed elsewhere, and found a national file of robbery cases which included invasions of bank employees' homes. They then spoke to a special agent in the Phoenix FBI, immediately identified two bank robbers, Terry Connor and Joseph Dacherty. Witness descriptions also then matched the felons.
Yeah.
So they then realized these must be our guys, and they then learned that Connor and Dacherty had met in federal prison. Terry Connors was the leader, and he had committed 3 bank robberies in Arizona. Each time, he and his partner held the bank employees hostage overnight. Joe Dacherty was just a thug from Philadelphia with no sophisticated MO. So when they joined up, they took on Terry's pattern, and then Joe kind of was just like the muscle. Upon investigations, they discovered that Connor had a girlfriend that lived in Pacific Grove, California, and they wondered if then Terry was heading in that direction. So they put surveillance into place. While doing a spot check on the residence, they discovered a vehicle parked out front with an Oklahoma license plate. But when they phoned the Oklahoma City office, there was no record of that vehicle. So obviously he had purchased it under a false name.
Yeah.
When speaking to the gardener, they discovered that the robbers had not been at the house yet, but he had recalled overhearing the girlfriend talking about meeting up with Connor the following week. So now they had a lead. Agent then followed Connor's girlfriend for days, learning that she drove several different cars. They placed tracking devices on each of them with receivers, and the FBI cars and airplanes would then track everywhere she drove.
But isn't that cool?
Right.
At least you die.
Wow. On the day she was supposed to meet Connor, they lost signal. Eventually, they did pick up the signal again, where they spotted a car in front of a restaurant, but there was no sign or of the girlfriend or Terry Connor. They established then a full-time coverage on the car until something happened, which means they didn't let the car out of sight until they, had something.
Yeah.
They also let out the air out of the tires so that they couldn't drive away if they spotted the FBI.
Yeah.
There was a very long hour stakeout, but it paid off because Terry Connor then drove into the parking lot with his girlfriend. The suspect was known to carry weapons, so the tactical arrest team needed to be very cautious and take the lead, and they gave Terry Connor no opportunity to flee. The girlfriend was questioned and released after investigations as it determined she was not involved.
But she's driving different cars. Right? What did you think was happening?
Right? And the agents then discovered nearly $40,000 in the trunk of the car, and there were several of the serial numbers matched the money stolen from the Oklahoma City robbery. The agents also found a large diamond and dealer's receipts for 6 more.
Hectic.
So he probably was stealing the money, buying diamonds, and then selling the diamonds.
But remember back in the days, in banks, they also kept diamonds.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. There was like a special room.
I know, for example, in South Africa, it was a thing that if you went to the bank and you had 100 rand and you gave them the 100 rand, they had to give you 100 rand worth of gold. That's what gave our money value. Mm. So if you wanted, you could exchange all your money for gold.
Yeah.
Its weight in gold. Mm. I don't think they do that anymore, though. I don't think we have that much gold. But yeah. Okay. So Connor was then charged with the Oklahoma City robbery. In handing over his personal effects during the intake process, something of interest emerged as they found a sales receipt for a Renault from a car dealership, and the buyer was listed as Russell Anderson, which was an alias. And it had given an address in Santa Maria, California. They then checked the house, but it seemed that it had been abandoned and there was no one occupying it. And during this time, so even though his partner was in prison, Joe Dacherty continued to rob banks using the same method that Connor had taught him.
Yeah.
Although without Terry Connor controlling Dacherty, he was a loose cannon. For 8 months, there was no sign of Joe anywhere. Then in Phoenix, the night before the busiest shopping day of the year, the vice president, which I'm assuming is Black Friday, the vice president of the large area bank returned home with his family from Thanksgiving dinner with their relatives. Their home had appeared to be burglarized, but the intruders hadn't left. Through the night, the two robbers held the banker and his family hostage, and Joe Dacherty had now a new partner. The next morning, Joe Dacherty and his new partner were ready to rob the bank. They would use the banker's car for transportation with his children as collateral. In less than 2 hours, they would drive to the bank, empty the vault, and escape with $270,000 in cash, leaving the family frightened but unharmed. The banker described the assailants, saying both were wearing wigs and the bigger one was in charge. Dacherty and his new partner were more violent and with their threatening than what he had been with Connor. Mm. But again, they had left no evidence and no leads. 6 months later, 900 miles to the northwest, the local police called the FBI to another bank robbery. And once again, it had proceeded with the hostage being taken. But this time, the level of violence had increased as there was now a bomb. They had strapped it around the bank officer, indicating that it was explosive and that if he didn't do what he was told, then they would detonate it. The bomb specialist then freed the terrified bank officer and sent him out to safety. He then cut out the power supply, but actually determined the device was a fake. You know what? It's actually not a bad idea to use a fake bomb. I mean, if you put something on me and told me it was a bomb,
I'd believe you.
I'd believe you. Yeah. I really am going to believe you. But with it being fake, you then lose the risk of accidentally setting it off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you put something onto me that had, like, blocks of gray thing and a beep, oh, my goodness. I would be like, I'll do anything. I'll do anything. Just tell me what to do. Have my kidney, have everything. I don't care. I really would.
This is very interesting. So the first guy, how many did he commit before?
So he had committed 3 before he got into prison. Then he committed the 1 before they caught him. That's then late. This other guy had committed more, but before he got into prison, it wasn't sophisticated.
Yeah.
It was more small MO type of things. Then he
met
this guy and carried on. But don't worry, Terry Connors comes back.
Okay.
Our story's not done, guys. These people, guys, I was reading into this and I was just like,
wow.
This is you know how we say we get boring criminals? These are not boring criminals, I promise. Okay. The bank officer told the FBI that him and his family had been held hostage at gunpoint overnight by 2 men wearing wigs. Witnesses had seen a white sedan with Washington State plates speeding away from the bank after the robbery, so agents searched the area. They found the vehicle abandoned less than 200 yards from the Reno FBI office. It seemed Joe was boldly challenging the FBI.
Hectic.
They traced the plates and found it had recently been purchased by a man matching Joe's description and a pregnant woman, which was they supposed was Joe's girlfriend.
Mm.
And the U.S. Marshals were then called in. The Marshals painstakingly followed a complex trail of cars, aliases, and eventually got a break as they discovered a car accident report linking one of Dacherty's aliases to an address in Idaho.
Mm.
Since the house appeared to be abandoned when they went there, the marshals interviewed neighbors, and one woman immediately recognized the robber, though obviously he had given her a different name. She said that he had the peculiar habit of shooting pistols in the backyard, but a week earlier they'd packed up and moved. The moving truck rental records were then
subpoenaed.
That one. It's not Orange, but okay. So they got the moving truck rental records for the area, and they determined that Joe's girlfriend had rented one under a false name and driven to Colorado. That's another thing. Do you see how fast they were moving around?
Yeah.
Different names. Like, they were...
And she's telling me the girls didn't know. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, the Terry's girlfriend. The first time he says change your name, I'm like, what's going on?
Sorry, the man walked in with like how much cash?
Exactly.
Where did you get the cash?
No, I'm asking. They definitely knew. The girlfriends were in on it.
I definitely, especially this one. This one was.
But even the other one was changing cars and all of
exactly.
that.
Exactly. You don't just do that.
And meeting him secretly. Yeah. Why?
The rental company gave authorities her destination, which was a house in the mountains outside of Denver. FBI agents in the and the U.S. Marshals then watched over from the cover of the woods surrounding the house. Because there was now a baby involved, they obviously needed to be more cautious because by this time the baby had been born.
Mm.
At one point, they observed the girlfriend leaving the house with another man, and some of the marshals then followed the two into town. They saw that the mom didn't have the baby when they went into the restaurant, so they checked the car, but the infant wasn't there, so it meant that the baby was still at the house with Joe.
Mm.
They then arrested the girlfriend and the male associate, and the girlfriend confirmed that Dacrity and the infant child were still inside the house, which means they needed to resolve the situation peacefully. The FBI negotiator then placed a call to the house, but Joe hung up, so the negotiator later phoned back and told him to come out of the house as he already had the girlfriend and the accomplice that in custody and asked him to consider the child's safety and surrender peacefully. He actually did. He then came out the house and was arrested without a struggle. And once the baby was out of the way, they began to search the house and discovered 16 firearms, all hidden, all loaded, all charged and ready to defend the house. So obviously, I think he didn't want to hurt his kids, so I do think he... And, I mean, they had, like, a couple of snipers set out. They were surrounded. He wasn't getting out of there alive. Joe was charged and held for trial in Oklahoma. Almost a year and a half later, on June 19, 1985, two U.S. Marshals were transporting Terry Connor and Joseph Dacrity to Oklahoma City House. Now, the reason they were together was because Joseph had called Terry as like a witness or something, so they were going to the courthouse together. With smuggled in jailhouse contraband, a handcuff key and a razor blade, they never planned on arriving at the courthouse as they overpowered the marshals, handcuffed them to a tree, stole their weapons, badges, and car.
Hectically exciting.
Right? So we've gone bank robbery, we've been fugitives, and now we're breaking out of custody. Right. Yeah. Security cameras then captured their next crime as they committed two small-scale bank robberies in St. Louis. And they believed it was because they needed quick cash before they got into their regular routine. They believed, well, the FBI agents, that these two would be coming back to strike again. And obviously, a bank officer and his family were going to be targets.
Mm.
2 months later, the police in West Allis, Wisconsin, received news of a bank robbery. It was obviously the familiar pattern of two gunmen taking hold of the bank president and his wife and taking them hostage, and again then making them help rob the bank. And they had a lookout. The fugitives were bolder as they no longer used disguises. And I remember in the interview I was watching, the guy was even like, oh, the FBI know who we are.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, that's bold. Yeah. Like, they'll know our names.
Yeah.
They literally said, no, they don't know our names. I was like, oh, guys.
Hectic
stuff. Connor and Dacrity were placed on the FBI's 10 most wanted fugitives list.
Hectic.
Agents later got hold of a man who they thought had been one of their lookouts. At first, the man refused to answer questions about Connor and Dacrity, which went on for 5 days, and as he was afraid of facing Connor and Dacrity in court. Later, in hopes of getting a reduced sentence, he agreed to cooperate but not testify. They said he didn't need to testify because they had enough on them. They basically just needed a way to catch them.
Yeah.
He revealed how Connor and Dacrity chose the banks they robbed and how they traveled and how they communicated through hotel front desks.
Mm.
So, one of them would call up and make a reservation in the name of a former prison warden. The other one would then call up and ask if the person had checked in yet. When the switchboard operator said no, they hadn't, they'd say, well, can I leave a message for him? And when the other one then came in, he would get the message that was left for him.
Wow, okay.
Brilliant.
Right?
Like, oh, I'm like, this is how we do crime.
There's nobody else listening to these messages.
I mean, we...
Because at some point, I'm like, I want to hear what they think.
I'm sorry, we don't do crime, but if you do crime, this is how you do crime. I'm sorry. The most important piece of information he gave at this point was that of the name of another man who was helping Conan Dacherty rob banks. His name was John Harris. Agents found Harris in Tucson, Arizona. After surveilling him, they saw him making and receiving calls at a certain payphone. They then got a warrant to tap the phone and listen into Conan Dacherty. They learned the fugitives were calling from Chicago and were planning another robbery. The special agents in the FBI Chicago field office then distributed photos of the fugitives to the area hotels. One phoned in and said, listen, there's a guy here that looks like Dacherty.
Yeah.
And they also then, when they went through the registers of the hotel, they realized one of the aliases had to be Connor.
Mm.
So then they needed to confront Connor. They got there and realized he was in his room, but they wanted to do it outside the room to avoid a standoff. They were very concerned it would get violent because Connor had said and vowed that he would never be taken alive.
Mm.
When he didn't come out of his room, they didn't let him have the... Oh, when he did come out of his room, they didn't give him the chance to get away. They literally pounced on him. And Connor was arrested. However, Joe Dacherty had seen the police as he was driving in. So he had obviously gone out.
Yeah.
And as he drove in, he saw them phone the switchboard saying, listen, what's going on? And when they're like, oh, this has happened, he then fled. And so the agents then had to search the area but didn't find him. One thing they know is that he would continue to commit robberies.
Yeah.
So they believed that this... They called on... They continued to follow John Harris and learned that Harris had recently flown to San Francisco. And again, they spotted Harris repeatedly use a certain payphone and ordered another tap being put on the phone. And a week later, they realized Joe was also in San Francisco.
Yeah.
He himself had been surveilling John Harris to make sure he hadn't been followed.
Hmm.
That's, I mean, you're surveilling your own lookout. He planned a meeting for the next morning there in San Francisco, but agents were waiting for him, and he was arrested, and the nationwide manhunt had come to an end. Terry Connor and Joseph Dacherty were then tried for their most recent crimes. They each received 2 life sentences plus 139 years without parole, and they were kept in separate federal prisons, their partnership forever terminated.
I just want to say Joe Dacherty is very impressive.
Right?
I'm like, Terry, bro, I broke you out and you're going back. Like, what is
your
problem?
You know what my thing is, what's so surprising is that Terry was originally the brains of the operation.
Yeah, so like how he kept getting... Well, I guess...
But I feel
like,
Joe maybe had
he was
more experience.
Street smart. Yeah,
I feel like Joe knew how to keep himself under the radar.
Yeah.
But I mean, I loved how you were phoning the lookouts from different cities.
Yeah.
You were using
but
different cars.
What I didn't like was that the lookout was using the same phone the whole time. That's stupid.
It is stupid. But I mean, using the hotel, what's it called? The front desk to communicate. Like,
I usually wouldn't. But in this story, I am going to say the FBI were very impressive.
No, I also agree. Like, they were on top of this
case.
They didn't let it slide. They were... The fact that they were even managed to track them after all the identities, all the cars, girlfriends helping out, other people helping out. I mean...
That was hectic.
I wonder what happens. So, you know, Joseph had the other partner while Terry was in prison. Did he just drop that other partner? Like, I'm going back.
Isn't he the male accomplice that was arrested with the girlfriend?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Okay, yeah. Then because he didn't get arrested.
And then they were like, we're not breaking you out. Just stay
but
where you are.
Do you think they had the plan that, listen, if we get arrested, this is how we're going to break
out? I think so.
Because I don't think it was an accident that he called Terry to be a witness on his case.
Yeah.
Okay, but number one, why are you transporting them together?
Yeah, that's stupid.
And why were there only 2 of you in the car? Like, where's the backup? Right. Hello?
And
like, what?
I think also that the plan was probably if one of us gets arrested, the other one will get the other one out. But if we both get arrested, this is what we do.
No, I definitely think they had a plan. These people were, I mean, the fact that even at the houses, no evidence was left. Like, they were clean, they were smart.
Yeah. Except Terry. Terry wasn't clean because when they checked his car, they found receipts and all sorts of stuff. And I think Joe got himself caught when he parked his car by the FBI. That was stupid.
I really do, though, think that Joe was probably the street smart. I think that's why he survived much longer than Terry. And then, especially now, because Terry had given him this brilliant idea on how to do the robberies.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe...
He was like, let's go, I'll do it. You just say it, I'll do it. He's one of those people that can't come up with the plan, but he can execute the plan.
So I found this case very interesting.
Well done, Danielle. Your privileges for picking topics have not been revoked.
Yeah, you know, I always love a good heist story. Yeah. I love heist movies. It's just a thing.
Yeah.
But I really thought this was well done. Not hear my heart and not my words,
yeah,
please. I really enjoyed it. And, I mean, it went on for quite a while because they started in 1982 and they only got arrested officially like a couple of years later.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty
for
impressive.
For two guys, I mean, it's not a whole...
It's not like the Pink Panthers where they have a whole organization behind them. If you haven't listened to that show,
go listen to that show.
This is two men. Okay, yeah. Like they said, they had a couple of accomplices, and they must have had. People said they also believe there was a getaway driver.
Yeah,
because the guys often just hopped in the car and the car stayed off. So there were probably several more people that were involved. But
yeah.
I just loved how professionally things were handled. Like. The phone booths in different cities and the way they communicated and using prison warden names. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of like a stab at the police. Like,
yeah.
We're using your own people. So I enjoyed this case.
Yeah.
And like
it would be nice if they broke out again after that.
I wonder if they... Let me Google if they're still alive. I don't think so. Might be.
But boy, would they have a story to tell.
Oh, my goodness.
Imagine sitting with your grandfather and he's telling you all of these stories.
Because Joseph Dacherty had a child.
Yeah.
Aw, I want to... No,
but it would be cool to know an old person who used to do crime.
That would be so cool.
Tell me your story.
You're sitting at the old age home and they're telling you all these really cool stories. And, oh, man... That's so cool.
It is cool.
Okay, I can't find if he's dead or alive. But, well, they were probably maybe in their, like, 30s, 40s, in the 80s.
Yeah.
So they could still be alive. They could be about 70, 80 years old.
Yeah, possible.
It's clever, though. I agree that they kept them in separate prisons after.
Yeah.
Because if they're in the same prison, they're not staying there very long. They would have had, Alcatraz breakout.
They, on their own, weren't strong enough. I feel like they needed each other. Because when they were together, they did the most.
Yeah, exactly. Breaking out of custody.
Yeah,
it's... And, I mean, like you said, I mean, Terry, they obviously, after they robbed that bank, split up. And I think if they'd stayed together, I don't think Terry would have been caught the first time.
No, I don't think so, because Terry needed... But I also think Terry was Joe's calm, because he became more violent when Terry wasn't
there. They definitely needed each other. And even the second time, I mean, the second time, they were still together. But, I mean, by that time, the FBI were really hot on their trail.
Yeah.
But I feel like in the beginning, if they had stuck together, I think this might have been a very different story.
Yeah, I think so.
Where there is team, there's conquest, I'm just saying.
Not for criminals. Don't take tips.
Yeah. Please don't rob a bank. I didn't tell you to do that. but that is all for this week. We will see you next time.
But from now until next week, no mourners.
No funerals.
Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and YouTube. It's Active FM.